This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Pakistan, Afghanistan, the borderland between, long a conflict zone predating the U.S. ISAF entry into the Afghanistan conflict of these last decades. And now again, Pakistan officials have not confirmed or commented on the headline in the New York Times. The airstrikes killed at least 45 people, stoking fears of a violent resurgence of the conflict in eastern Afghanistan, which has become a base for Pakistani militants. That's the headline reported from Kabul, Christina Goldbaum for the New York Times. I welcome Bill Raggio of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, a senior fellow. He and his colleagues keep the Long War Journal. Decades of watching this same area when the U.S. and NATO were committed to guarding it, to making very clear that the cross-border activity of the Taliban was unacceptable. Now it's routine, and that has led to airstrikes with tragic pictures of families' homes destroyed and wounding. In this particular instance, the airstrike was against a village in Khost province, but both Khost and Kunar were struck. Bill, a very good evening to you. Khost and Kunar is territory we watched for decades, Bill, watching the activity of the Taliban. The New York Times headline calls them Pakistani militants. Who are they who strike across the border into Pakistan and the Pakistani Air Force responds with airstrikes into Afghanistan? Good evening to you, Bill.
Good evening, John. Yes, these so-called Pakistani militants are really a group known as the Movement of the Taliban in Pakistan. This is a group that was formed in late 2006, early 2007 from a variety of Pakistani independent Taliban groups that were originally in the tribal areas, what was known as the tribal areas. North Waziristan, South Waziristan, Bajor, there's a host of other districts that are not districts in Pakistan's Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province. They swear allegiance to the Afghan Taliban, and they cooperate closely with Al-Qaeda. Some of the documents we found in Osama bin Laden's file, Tom Jocelyn and I reported on this. Al-Qaeda helped the Pakistani Taliban or the movement in the Taliban in Pakistan write their founding documents and were providing advice, guidance, and even instructions on what their mission statement and their charter says. So it's part of this network of jihadists that operate in the region. The Pakistani Taliban or the movement in the Taliban in Pakistan took over large areas of what was then the Northwest Frontier Province, and as well as the tribal areas, and advanced up to 50 miles outside of Islamabad before the Pakistani state launched an offensive to beat them back. That's because the Pakistani government and the military signed peace agreements with this group. They viewed them as being someone they could work with, just as they work with the Afghan Taliban. And the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan is supported by the Afghan Taliban. Thousands upon thousands of their fighters are operating in eastern and even southern and central Afghanistan. They were vital in the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan, and now they're being repaid by continuing safe haven and support. They're using U.S. military weapons that were captured by the Taliban during the takeover last summer. And so the Afghan Taliban is providing them support if they're letting them use that high-end equipment that was seized from the Afghan military.
The puzzle here is where to go to resolve this conflict, because striking into a Pakistan necessarily leads to a response, especially because Pakistan is now between governments. It has a new prime minister with a new relationship towards the army. The New York Times goes on to write, in eastern Afghanistan, many feared that the carnage of the recent airstrikes was the beginning of a violent new chapter of the long-running conflict in the tribal lands that spill across the border. Reinforcing those concerns, Afghanistan's acting Minister of Defense, Mullah Mohammad Yaqub, warned in a speech that the Taliban government would not tolerate any more invasions from neighboring countries on Afghan soil. Bill, it is impossible to ignore the fact that the Pakistani Taliban and the Afghanistan Taliban are working as one. At least they were working prior to the exit of the ISAF forces in the summer of 2021. Do we have any information that there's a separation between these, that the Afghanistan acting minister of defense can make statements as if he doesn't know about these strikes across the border?
Oh, everyone knows. I mean, the Taliban knows what's happening here. And again, the fact that they're using the weapons seized from the Afghan military, that they have safe havens. That report also noted that hundreds, if not thousands, of fighters are armed and operating in the open in eastern Afghanistan. The Afghan Taliban knows what the Pakistani Taliban is doing. And by the way, sometimes the Afghan Taliban and the Pakistani Taliban are one and the same. The Haqqani network, for instance, U.S. officials used to say, well, when the Haqqanis operated on the Pakistan side of the border, they were Pakistani Taliban. The home of the Haqqanis family is in North Waziristan and Miram Shah, that's inside Pakistan. And when they're on the Afghan side of the border, they were Afghan Taliban. Remember that the Durand line is not recognized by the Taliban and by the Afghans. They view the Pashtuns on both sides of the Durand line, of that border between Afghanistan and Pakistan, as being their brothers. They just don't see it that way. The Pakistani Taliban wants what the Afghan Taliban wants, which is basically an Islamic Emirate of Pakistan. They want to take control of the country, just as the Afghan Taliban did in Afghanistan.
And because we're watching this game of deniability, we go to the question of what is to be done. The statements from Afghanistan, from Kabul, are apparently confrontational, but do we believe that Kabul has the ability or need to confront the Pakistani military, which after all is at some point the author of the Afghanistan Taliban?
Yeah, I think what we're witnessing here is essentially a complicated kabuki dance. The Afghan Taliban really have no ability to meaningfully strike against the Pakistani state, nor do they want to. That's their sponsor. And the Pakistani state really doesn't want to hurt the Afghan government, which is the Afghan Taliban, because after all, that's their proxy. They help them take power, and they want the strategic depth that the Taliban gives them inside of Afghanistan. So what we see from both sides is a lot of posturing. It's statements that go nowhere. And by the way, this type of fighting has been going on for years, long before the Afghan Taliban took over. The Pakistani military has launched artillery and missile strikes and airstrikes into Afghanistan while the Afghan government was there. But it was convenient at the time to blame the Afghan government for sheltering the Pakistani Taliban. If you notice, when the Pakistani state talks about these attacks, they're not pointing to the Afghan Taliban. They're not accusing them of sponsoring the Pakistani Taliban. So there's a lot of statements made that really go nowhere. This is the price the Pakistani state is willing to pay. It's the most cynical thing I've witnessed, one of the most cynical things I've witnessed in my two decades of covering this, where they're willing to accept thousands of civilians, military, police, and civil administrators, the deaths by the hands of the Pakistani Taliban in order to keep good relations with the Afghan Taliban.
And Bill, also from the New York Times, a report about ISIS attacks throughout the country dating back to last summer. As I recall, we started talking about this right after the ISAF forces had left Kabul. These ISIS attacks, do we believe they're building to something? The New York Times observes through informants that they're undermining the Kabul government. Is that accurate?
These attacks are undermining the Kabul government, which the Afghan Taliban wants to be in control of the country. And by all accounts, they are, except for these ISIS attacks and some smattered Afghan resistance, which is really not much at the moment, but bears watching. The Islamic State doesn't control territory. It isn't able to organize and operate in the open. It's able to conduct terror attacks. The Afghan Taliban isn't under the constraints that the U.S. Military and the Afghan government was. They can have ruthlessly suppressed the Islamic State. The attacks that began after the Taliban takeover tapered off sometime in November, and the Islamic State was essentially dormant up until now. So it has capacity to launch terror attacks, but I don't believe, at least in this point in time, and given that it doesn't have an external supporter like the Pakistani state or Iran, It doesn't play well with others. It doesn't have any other allies in the region because it demands everyone swear fealty to its leader. It's a spoiler in Afghanistan, but I think it doesn't have the staying power. It doesn't have the reach that the Afghan Taliban does.
Final detail. Does the Pakistan military regard ISIS as a threat? Is there any evidence that Islamabad is moving?
The Islamic State is absolutely a threat to the Pakistani military. Again, the Islamic State wants to overthrow the Pakistani state, and it also opposes its prime proxy in Afghanistan, which is the Afghan Taliban. And the Islamic State conducts attacks inside of Pakistan as well. The Islamic State can't be controlled by the Pakistani state.
Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. He and his colleagues keep the Long War Journal, which continues after the departure of ISAF. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.